Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of In the Ring with Acacia Kuma. This is a very Belmont Stakes-centric show today, as we are getting ready to wrap up Triple Crown season, which is pretty crazy. On to the final jewel of the Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes, taking place up at Saratoga this year. But before we do that, I want to get a big thank you in to Adelphi Racing Club for making this show possible. The Adelphi Racing Club is a modern racing partnership that delivers the top-class partner experience, transparent communication, and success on the racetrack, winning 18% of starts while finishing in the money more than 50% of the time since the club's inception in 2020. Adelphi's recent stakes winners include New York Bred's Funny How and Pandagate. After his dominating win in the Gander Stakes, Pandagate and his partners enjoyed a world-class racing experience in Dubai when finishing third to some of the top three-year-olds in the world in the UAE Derby. Adelphi's practical approach to horse acquisition means partners compete at the highest levels of the sport at efficient price points. Pandagate, Funny How, many other stakes, and high-level allowance horses such as Royal Poppy and Gem Mint 10 were all purchased for under $150,000 at auction or private purchase. Currently, limited shares left in a couple of recently acquired two-year-olds, including fillies by Twirling Candy and McKinsey. You can learn more by visiting AdelphiRacing.com or emailing founder and managing partner Matt Cutter at matt@AdelphiRacing.com. Thank you to Adelphi Racing Club for the support. As mentioned, today is a Belmont Stakes-centric show. I've been up here in Saratoga watching a lot of the workouts, watching a lot of the preparations of these horses getting ready for the Belmont Stakes, and the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival as a whole, just jam-packed as far as stakes action is concerned, coming up next week. When I'm recording this, it's Friday, the week before the Belmont Stakes, so still a little bit of the deep breath before the plunge, but the craziness has definitely started. But one of the really cool things about it, and I'm not just sugarcoating this because of my position, but Saratoga is such an amazing town for horse racing because so much of the town is affected by what happens at the track and reacts to what's happening at the track. But you could just feel it when you're downtown. You don't even have to be at the racetrack. The Belmont signs, the flags, the local businesses that have Belmont Stakes promotions that are, you know, decorating for the Belmont Stakes. It's really cool. It's really, really fun. I know it's not tradition, as of course we would love to see it, but I am, for one, really excited about the Belmont Stakes this year. So we'll get a chance to hear from a couple connections associated with some Belmont Stakes potential runners on today's show. With that, we'll get right to it. I'm thrilled to welcome back to the show a repeat guest here, General Manager of Mill Ridge Farm, Price Bell, joining me. Price, thanks for taking the time. Happy to have you on again.
Love being on, and I'm honored for the call and appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's usually a good sign when you have a lot of people asking to interview you, because it means that a horse you've been associated with has probably done something big. And that's the case of what we're talking about today. Mill Ridge consigning in 2022 as a yearling in Saratoga, a son of Arrogate that would soon one day become known as Seize the Gray, who we just saw a couple weeks ago winning the Preakness. Price, what is it like for your team watching a horse that you've consigned go on to win a classic?
Well, it's, you know, it's what we dream for and work towards every day. You know, it takes a lot of, it's a big team, and everybody, you know, everybody's doing it not for the money, but for the love of the horse and the competition and the dream that, you know, the horse that you're with and working with and helping along could win at the highest level. I mean, it truly is what it's all about, because if you're doing it for the money, I hate to break the news, but it's this is the wrong profession. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a game of highs and lows. But as far as Seize the Gray does go, I mean, he's been right there. And he's had a couple of really big wins. Obviously, the Preakness, a huge success. But before that, winning the Pat Day Mile Derby weekend with huge effort. Just talk a little bit about following his career and what it's been like seeing him on the racetrack for Wayne Lucas.
Well, it's been a dream. He broke his maiden at Saratoga. Mm-hmm. And he did it. I'm trying to remember if I was there, but he did it, you know, what, and he did his like a long shot. And he actually beat Doorknock in his, mm-hmm. in his maiden at Saratoga. And then, so obviously when that happens, you have this huge, we were not there as the week before we got there. But anyway, there was this huge kind of buildup, because to have a horse win at Saratoga as a two-year-old is when the dream begins, right? Mm-hmm. And so from there, he then ran again at Saratoga, and he never quite got back to that form, but it certainly opened the door. So Lucas, coach is just, he's the best, and he's incredible. His storytelling, his memory is unbelievable. One of the great memories that I have is a friend bought a breakfast at coach's house for a Derby Museum kickoff, and it was auctioned off, and coach had breakfast for 8 people, and I was lucky to be invited to go. And then we walked through his trophy room, and he spent 2 hours telling stories about photos and trophies. It was unbelievable. And that was a decade ago. And Lucas has met thousands of people in his life. And he still remembers me from that breakfast and the conversation we had there. So anyway, so what did it mean to have, Seize the Gray, come along and just kind of following? Well, I guess when he broke his maiden, he beat Dornock in that race. And you're like, wow, this could be anything. And then he fell off form. They were very smart. Roderick Watchman and the team at my racehorse, Michael Behrens, they sent him to Highlander Training Center for, a freshening, comes back at Oaklawn and wins this year. And it's like, huh, that was exciting. Mm-hmm. We were then excited to see him reappear in the Jeff Rubies at Turfway. And it was like, I guess bittersweet, because we actually also raised Endlessly, who won that race, Oscar Performance son. And so to have two horses in that race, and now you're on the Derby trail, right? And then go to the Bluegrass and thought, maybe you're going to try and get some points. He was a little, he was unlucky in the Bluegrass. It was a tough race. And then to see him on the Pat Day Mile was just, it was incredible. Because that whole week we're building up for Endlessly, Seize the Gray. It felt like he was on the outside looking in, but when they had to make the decision to go Pat Day Mile or Derby that week, because you couldn't cross enter, really felt like he had a shot. Loved that he was reunited with Jaime Torres, and that we're there at the Derby. And so then when at the top of the lane, when he kind of kicked clear, it was like, wow, that was really fun. and then when, they turn and go to the Preakness, the breeder, who's a dear family friend, is a woman named Audie Otto, and her mother and my grandmother were the best of friends. They were so close, in fact, Audie's mother's name was Tolly, that Tolly moved to Lexington so that they could be, closer, and that's where she lived the, last like 20, 25 years of her life.
Wow.
And so Audie invited us to go to the Preakness. So it was me and my wife, Beth, and our children, George and Caroline. And so to then experience that day with our whole family, it was the first time any of us had actually been to Pimlico, any Preakness, and to have that memory is one that we will cherish for our entire life.
It's kind of those moments are why we do it, right? To be able to see your horse be successful in the biggest stages, winning at Churchill Downs on Derby Day, winning a race like the Preakness, going into the Belmont Stakes. That's kind of, you said, this is not a game if you're in it for the money, but those moments and the people that you do it with, the relationships that bring along the way, that's what keeps us all coming back for it.
Amen. I mean, it is a business of dreams. Mm-hmm. And then, the high fives and hugs shared when it becomes a reality, and then because more often than not, it doesn't. Right. I mean, it's so, so hard. But those hugs and high fives are all worth it. And they're so addictive that all you want to do is do it again. It's the greatest elixir. So, and Dad was actually with Coach Lucas, when he breezed for his last breeze at Churchill. And, it seems all systems go. He seems to be doing really well. And, it's pretty magical. And I tell you, and this is maybe an aside, but this horse is especially meaningful to us. During the pandemic, we started doing virtual tours. We really are passionate about sharing the farm and horses with people. And so we developed an incredible group of friends on the virtual tours who have been very, committed and loyal and become really great friends. And a lot of those people, when Seize the Gray was bought by my racehorse, bought shares in Seize the Gray. So like they all along the virtual tour experience, people wanted how do I do more? How do I become more involved? So when Seize the Gray was offered on my racehorse and he was sold out very quickly, a lot of the owners were people who were first kind of fans of Millridge through virtual tours. So then to have this kind of, it really feels like a big team horse, which has been really special.
That's so awesome that those people got the chance to really experience it on that side of things too. And you mentioned the relationship with the breeder, and I know you're very close to the family of this horse, the pedigree, knowing it very well. How does that come into play when choosing the best spot to sell a horse, and how you can put that horse in the right spot to potentially be successful and find the right kind of buyers?
So it's a great question. And it's a lot of, I think it's part of the fun and, you know, and again, no one knows, but you're just trying to be thoughtful and make the best decisions in placing horses, and whether that's at a particular sale or in a particular session within a sale or book within a sale. So Seeds of Grace from the final crop of Arrogate. We were always big believers in Arrogate. Dad was a huge supporter and loved Arrogate. He actually, I think in his last year, bred 11 mares to him, which was bubble year, but Arrogate's stud fee, as it happens, had gone down to 50,000, thought it was good value. So, and admittedly, if you recall, you know, Gunrunner was in the same crop as Arrogate, and he was like, I mean, still, it's just, you know, an unbelievable sire. And Arrogate was a little bit slower to come to hand. It wasn't until kind of, I think, December and January of his first crop, his two-year-olds and three-year-olds, that really they started kind of moving. So for a lot of seasons, year as a foal into weanling into yearling, it was like, oh boy, is there going to be a market for Arrogate? You know, and then as Arrogate gained momentum, we were very hopeful. So we had a number on the farm, and actually a couple that have also gone on to be stakes winners. So part of our strategy was we wanted to separate them. So we wanted to separate our Arrogate offspring in various sales and in various books within sales. So we'll nominate a lot of our yearlings to the Fasig Tipton sales, and they'll come out and they'll inspect, and then they'll kind of give us a line on, you know, what horses they think would do well at various sales. They're great partners in that exercise. And so if you know, it's interesting. So Seize the Gray is the third foal out of his mother, Smart Shopping. At that stage, you know, so you're cataloging him, and you're not sure if Smart Shopping is going to be a good producer, right? Because she hadn't really had the time for anything to happen on the racetrack yet. And so we had sold an American Pharaoh, and then the previous year we sold an Uncle Mo filly, both fillies. We sold the Uncle Mo filly very well, and both very well, but we sold the Uncle Mo at Saratoga, and we chose Saratoga for her, and then ultimately for Seize the Gray, because you have an opportunity to really share with all the prospective buyers. There's a lot more time to, you know, promote the horse, to show the horse, which can be good and bad, right? You know, if you don't have a product that you think people want, you want less time to show it. But if you have a product that you want, or there's more to the story, you want that time to try and you know, share that story. And so part of selling Seize the Gray at Saratoga was he wasn't the tallest horse. And Arrogate, we were only going to be one of, I think there were just, you know, there were less than five Arrogates, I think, in the Saratoga sale. He was our only Arrogate in that sale. And we wanted to be able to showcase him because while he wasn't the biggest, most imposing, he had a lovely way of moving. He had a lovely walk on him. And he just looked like a really nice, you know, type horse. And to the My Racehorse team's credit, to, you know, Roderick Watchman and Nick Hines and that team, they did, you know, they loved him. They looked at him. I went back and looked at my notes. I think they looked at him three or four times. We had lots of conversations about him. Dr. Burke vetted him, and, you know, the rest is history. It was and it was really fun because as you're going through the sale, you're watching people kind of come together on a horse, if that makes sense. So, like, they would have had a – you know, they would, and at Saratoga, everyone looks at every horse as another, you know, good or bad, right? If you have a horse that you believe in, it works. If you have a horse that may not, you know, meet the criteria, then it feels pretty lonely. But to watch kind of the team look at him, ask questions, they ask questions like, how was he as a foal? Did you raise him? What was he like? And then they come back, they bring more members of their team and then more members of their team. And you're like, okay. And then, you know, you hope to get lucky. So.
And lucky indeed. And as he sold there, and kind of an intimate sale too. And I think you bring up really interesting points with that being a select sale. It's a very small catalog. You've got all the big trainers there. You've got the big races happening right across the street, kind of that story of dreams once again. And then shortly after Arcangelo winning the Belmont Stakes for a little, or I should say that was actually before he sold in 2022. So it was kind of starting to pick up at that point. And we saw what Arrogate would go on and do in the last couple of years. But it's just been amazing to see kind of the foresight that you and your family have had when it comes to stallions. My segue into that is Oscar Performance, who you touched on with Endlessly. And I think, I mean, my husband has a couple and he's just like, every time we go to a sale, it's like, gotta go look at the Oscar Performances. And I think so many people in the industry have become such big fans of him. I mean, it's gotta be incredible for you all seeing how effective he's been on all surfaces, really.
No, it's been an incredible gift and an incredible joy. And, you know, yeah, I mean, y'all have been, I mean, you know, Miguel and Christoph have been great supporters and Style Points is very hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we love her.
it takes so many, you know. Style Points is, you know, bred by Everett Dobson and the, you know, the team at Candy Meadows, you know, Cheyenne Stables, who's a shareholder. You know, and so we're so lucky to get great shareholders involved in the horse, the Ammermans, you know, being the biggest shareholder and giving us an opportunity to, you know, recruit like-minded quality breeders to support the horse. And then that, because we're just one part of it. It's really, it's where, you know, those who believe, who, you know, breed, who raise, who pre-train, and then ultimately who train. I mean, those are five key pieces of the puzzle to then have the success. It's just is such an incredible effort by so many. On Oscar Performance, which I think, you know, may be interesting and certainly pertinent to this podcast. So we had his first crop, and again, he was a turf horse, right? So everybody expected me turf horse, but the shape of the horses were not necessarily turfy, if that makes sense. So you kind of, you all describe it very well when you do your paddock analysis, you look for turf foot or, you know, sickle hocks, et cetera. And Oscar Horns wasn't necessarily throwing that. And so we were able to, you know, so the first yearling sale is July, and I mean, that we participate in. The next one is Saratoga. And we were able to work with the Fasig Tipton team to choose a couple of Oscar Performances to take to Saratoga because we really wanted to showcase them to all the breeders. That was kind of the first opportunity that, you know, the market was able to see them. And so Bo Bromagen bought one named Red Carpet Ready from that first sale at Saratoga. And it was that, and also, and then Saul Kuman bought G. Laurie, who was grade one stakes placed out of that sale. So it was an incredible opportunity to be able to, you know, spend the time, know that there were going to be, you know, I think Red Carpet Ready had 250 inspections. I think, you know, Steezy Gray similarly. So, you know, going in that you're going to have that number of inspections. And if your horse can meet that, you know, demand, it's great. But for Oscar Performance, it really helped us establish and show his offspring to the market. And that was a really, that was a really important way to help us get the momentum to breed for breeders to breed the next year and the following year. So.
And how important do you think that is? Because sometimes marketing what people think of as a turf horse can be a little bit tricky in this market. You know, you've kind of got Warfront as the stalwart in America, and he's obviously older at this point. But having a horse that's able to throw progeny that are so versatile, I have to imagine is a key factor in encouraging breeders.
Absolutely. No, it's been, it has absolutely been key. And then at the end of the day, you know, he had his first winner in April at Keeneland, which is like, you can't write a better script, but which was on the turf, but they've had a great willingness to win, you know, just like a desire that is, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're all trying to uncover, right? Is that, that desire to get to the front, and that will to be, you know, the best. And so, I think that has been kind of their greatest attribute. And so that's whether dirt, turf, poly. I think, you know, while we felt at the opportunity, I mean, that there weren't, you know, Ken's Joy was, had, you know, just passed away or was kind of waning in his career, English Channel the same. So there wasn't, More Than Ready was old. So there wasn't an American turf wars. Now, what I think we neglected, it was probably, you know, the, you know, Mike Ryan and team Chad was just starting to really go to Europe and cultivate those sales. I think Newspaper of Record may have, you know, been champion 2 year old, you know, the, maybe the year that Oscar went to stud or the year of his first crop. So I don't think we really anticipated the, that market could become so fruitful, you know, and that now, you know, while we were trying to position him as the best, you know, opportunity in American turf, I think we were neglecting that the global dynamics. And to his credit, he's, you know, kicked on, you know, and through the multi-dimension of the dirt and the turf and the poly.
Well, he's been so fun to follow. And like I said, such a versatile stallion, which I always love to see too. And throws a lot of really, really good looking progeny as well. And it looks like an Oscar Performance Colt, one of a couple cataloged in the July sale coming up. Obviously, we talked about Saratoga. I know you all are very busy throughout the summer with yearlings. What are some of the things coming up for Team Millridge that we can look forward to?
Well, you know, really, I all eyes are set on Belmont Weekend at Saratoga at the moment. you know, we're very fortunate. We've got a couple other, you know, candidates for a couple of the grade ones. So it's just, you know, it's a real dream and what it's all about. And then, you know, we'll take a deep breath. And, you know, I think we were talking the other day, I think there are less, you know, about 32, 33 days till the July sale. We've got a lovely, you know, group of three. That we're going to take. We've got an Oscar Performance who's a lovely horse and a good Magic and a Matoli. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's I'm very hopeful for the market. You know, obviously purse money is good, but I think everybody's a little, you know, cautious. But wow, it's been an incredible spring on the racetrack, and there's a lot of different, you know, groups winning races, which is exciting. And I hope that we feel some stability in the market and have a deep breath and like, okay, like this is okay. We love what we're doing and we love this, you know, this business and this sport. And so really looking forward to that July sale, and then a few weeks later, Saratoga, and then a few weeks later, September. And then we blink and it's Christmas.
That's it. It's like once the summer starts, it's pretty much over at that point.
It really is. That's a great reminder, Mark. You know, my wife reminds me, you know, we know what we're doing every weekend from July 1st until New Year's.
Yeah, pretty- that is very true. The life of the horse world, people, for sure.
That's right. That's well, right.
Price, thank you so much for taking some time today. We hope to see you at the Belmont, and best of luck with all of the team and following all of those horses and Belmont Stakes Week. And of course, with all the sales coming up. But thank you, as always, for the wonderful insight.
Thank you, Acacia. It's a pleasure. And yeah, best wishes and look forward to seeing you at Saratoga.
I'm thrilled to welcome in Don Little of Centennial Farm, who has a big weekend coming up with the final work of their Belmont Stakes contender Antiquarian. And Don, it's been a fun couple of months and fun seeing you in the winner's circle and all of the big things leading up to a big race next week.
Yeah, it's exciting to get back there. And you know, any race is exciting, but when you're in a race that has such a history of the Belmont and being fortunate enough to win it once, we've kind of experienced the thrill and looking forward to it again.
And you talked about the history, of course, Colonial Affair winning the Belmont in 93 with the Centennial colors, and that made jockey Julie Crone the first female jockey to win the Belmont, and a race that's kind of been immortalized in that as well. How special is that, being part of that sort of experience and looking back on it, and what a racehorse he was?
Yeah, it's very exciting to sort of relive that moment or that experience, really, because that's what it is. That's what all this is. This is about the experience of being involved in racing in a sport that can be such a roller coaster. And, you know, the fact that there are some superstitions that go along with racing. I remember being at the track at Belmont, watching Colonial Affair train weekly. So definitely I'm going to be in Saratoga starting tomorrow, watch our horse for the week, as I did with Corinthian when he won the Breeders' Cup. I was there for the week Not sure if the trainers like that too much, but it is what it is. And Julie Krohn, of course, she's a dear friend now. It was a historic moment. And, you know, it would be neat to repeat that journey, and having a horse in this exciting race that is by a stallion that we also campaigned.
Absolutely. It's another special piece of it, antiquarian by preservationist, who I remember when he won the Woodward and just the excitement from the whole team when it was at Saratoga that year. It was my first year working for NYRA. That has to be really cool when you're able to campaign a horse that ran in your silks and gave you some really special moments.
Well, it's, you know, it's like, as what as a few of my partners say, it's your grandson's doing really well.
And, I love that.
You know, it just makes everything that much more special. I mean, you know, we're fortunate that you know, we had the experience with preservationists. Yes, it took a while to have him win a graded stake, but you know, he broke his maiden as a 3-year-old, and as did this horse. Antiquarian, and having a lineage connection is great. I mean, you even look at, you know, Mike Rapoli with Fierceness. Unfortunately, he will not be running, but he'll be running the Haskell. But you know, having a homebred, so to speak, it just makes it that much more special and rewarding.
And he's kind of been a flag bearer for preservationists as well. Of course, Antiquarian winning the Peter Pan last time out, but you purchased him as a yearling. Was his stallion something that kind of piqued your interest at the sale with going over to look at him?
Well, when we retire a horse to stud, typically we'll try to support him to our best of ability. Mm-hmm. And if we see an individual that we really like or fits our criteria, we'll try to buy that horse. Sometimes we don't find them. You know, we Dr. Carr, our lead person for the purchasing team, and Paula Parsons, who runs a farm in Virginia, you know, that they have a very stringent model of what they're looking for. And even if their horses buy stallions that we campaigned as racehorses, if they don't fit that criteria, we're not going to buy it.
But
we always look and want to support them. And, you know, Brett Jones and the Jones family, Governor Jones, when he started it, you know, they breed a very, very nice horse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was 3 of them actually at the sale that they bred. That we liked. And of course, Antiquarian was our top choice, and we were fortunate enough to get him.
And he's been pretty fun as well. He's still lightly raced, but he broke his maiden second out, had trouble in the Louisiana Derby, and then winning a race like the Peter Pan and now going on to the Belmont. Talk a little bit about the journey with him and how he's progressed.
You know, it's funny. One of the questions that Dave Grinning asked, he said, well, was there anything wrong with him? And because he didn't start as a 2-year-old. And of course, that came from his history. And I said, no, there was nothing wrong. And, you know, we just take our time with horses. We don't expect a lot of horses to start as 2, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And our best horses over the years have been 4 and 5-year-olds.
Right.
And, those have made attractive stallion prospects for people. But he's been a neat horse to watch. I mean, you can definitely see in a 4-month period of time, you know, early on, the progression that he made. It was really watching the kid in the playground and in the schoolyard and on the athletic field. And he really progressed and matured mentally and physically, and I still think there's room to grow.
Yeah. He has been fun to follow. As you and I discussed, I was over by his stall the other day, and he has so much personality too. The whole time I was doing my report, he was playing with his jolly ball. And before that, he was like nuzzling me and going after my microphone, and just seems like a really, really neat horse. And that has to be fun to have one with so much personality, especially for you with partners and people who are maybe a little bit newer to the game and coming around to see these incredible incredible athletes, and that personality, I'm sure, a very fun piece of it.
Yeah, and it's fun because, you know, every horse has its own personality, and some have greater one than others. But he's a type that he knows when it's time to go to work. And interestingly enough, most good horses do show that. Mm. You know, they're playful. They might rear up. They might buck a little bit. But it's not to be mean or anything like that. It's just it's like a 13-year-old kid. And he really does learn from little things that he doesn't do right. And mm-hmm. and he's easily correctable. And when it's time to do his job, he does his job, and he's been doing it fairly well. And again, I think it's the partners, seeing the partners, especially the new ones in it. We have a handful of new ones in it, I think three or four, maybe mm-hmm. just three. But anyways, the excitement. And it's the magic of this game that keeps people coming back. And when you have a horse like this, it just compounds that excitement that much more. And, yeah. You know, I have a partner, our main partner, Peter and Peggy Horvitz, their family's been with us since 1988.
Wow.
And I have two new people that are, you know, it's their first go round. And, you know, we jokingly say, well, the Horvitz has got in 88. So that's been about 30 years. So expect now you're in it for 30 years, because their first partnership was Rubiano. So now you
wow.
got a potential horse that's going to be a is a graded stakes horse. So you're in it for 30 years. It's the magic of the equine, and they can take you anywhere. And it's been a great experience. And, you know, for me, it's a generational thing, going back to that. You know, Dad started the company mm-hmm. in 82. My grandmother used to ride steeplechase horses when she was younger. And so and my two boys are getting interested in the game. So if they went further on and continue Centennial as well, it would be a four generational sport. And you know, it's not often you see things like that. And we're hoping with Antiquarian he can carry on his daddy's generation on the racetrack.
It's pretty fun to follow, and it's certainly not uncommon in horse racing that throughout generations the love of the sport and the love of the horse will carry on too. And you mentioned the foundation that your dad and your grandfather laid with the history of Centennial and your history around horses as well, with your background with polo and just being a horseman. How does all of that come together with running a group like Centennial and bringing partners into this experience?
Well, I think it just adds, you know, credibility and confidence in the investors. And, you know, it's interesting that you look at the polo and the racing connection. You can go back generations. Guess what? The Belmont was named after August Belmont, who used to play polo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Whitneys, the Phippses, the current. I mean, Peter Brand, who owns Sierra Leone, he has a deep polo connection. He played for years. Will Farish and the Farish family, Jack Oxley, and you know, it goes on and on. And it's, I think the connection there for generational purposes is the real horsemen appreciate the athleticism
mm-hmm.
of the thoroughbred horse, and they can do anything in the speed and the agility. I'm not saying the quarter horses are bad or anything like that, but the having ridden thoroughbreds on a polo field and ridden thoroughbreds on an exercise track, you know, that's an exciting thing. It's amazing what they can do.
It is, and they are so versatile. And from somebody that rides thoroughbreds in, you know, a training world and in the show side of things, they're incredible with how they carry on. And I know from personal experience how much you are dedicated to aftercare and to making sure that horses have a great opportunity for a second career. Why is that something that's so important for you and for your group?
Again, it goes back to the horsemanship part of it. A lot of our partners are horse people themselves as well. Centennial started through the polo and the horse world because Dr. Carr, you know, we met him in Aiken, South Carolina when he was a vet practicing there, when Aiken was a big training facility. And, you know, when he was starting his vet practice, he took care of some of the greatest racehorses known. I mean, Forgo, Secretariat. So his knowledge of the game and the lineage and the pedigrees is invaluable. And, you know, I think, again, it's the aftercare. These horses' racing lives are short. You know, thoroughbreds live till they're 20 years old. And so if they run 4 or 5 years, there's a lot of time left. And it's important to us that we know that after racing, the horses that we have end up in a good situation. I have 4 of them at my home in Ipswich, Massachusetts. I think there might be a couple in Connecticut.
There's a few. I've seen a couple.
I've been a well-liked. The Acacia's dad in particular, well, mom runs it, but dad, I amuse with him all the time how our horse Mince is his favorite. And that's because he was the one that picked him up after you did a great job of helping him with his ankle surgery and things like that. And he picked him up and took him home from the vets. But, you know, it's all of the partnerships we do, we raise extra money to put in a fund for helping these horses. And it's exciting to see them doing other things as well.
It's so fun to follow. And yes, Mince is very loved by my dad. And Orion's Way, starting his journey as a show horse now too. He's in a really fun project for my mom, but I know it's so appreciated across the board, everything that Centennial does with the commitment to aftercare. But I wanted to circle back to a team, and you mentioned a couple of times Dr. Carr and Paula Parsons, who runs the Middleburg training track. With that team in place on that side, how important and how essential is that with prepping horses before they even get to their trainer at the racetrack and making sure that you have that foundation?
Again, I think it's extremely important. You know, one thing we do and Paula does at the farm is a little more English style. You know, they're not, we don't have a racetrack at the farm in Virginia. We use the Middleburg training facility, which is about a half a mile from the farm. So the horses have a nice hack, you know, to the track, up and down some hills. They see deer, they see fox. It's great for them mentally. It's great for them physically. When we early on, after they have saddles on them and the riders go out their first time, they go between the paddock aisles, and it's a very hilly farm. So, you know, you're jogging up and down hills and downhills, so you're not going from a stall to an oval. And it gives them a very good foundation, which is so important for any athlete. Sure. And you can't rush it. You know, I mean, the one thing about Dr. Carr and Paula, they've been doing it for years. Experience does pay off, and age, you know, that's one thing that we have. And, you know, Dad, again, I used to work with Dr. Carr for my senior year in high school as his vet assistant in the mornings at the Aiken Training Center for a month. That, you know, what I learned in a short period of time from him and walking in and going to the Green Tree, Phipps Stable, Rokeby, I mean, all the big farms were there. And, you know, they're very particular. And if there's something the three of us, when we get together after going over the final list, don't like, you know, we just move on. And we've been fortunate enough to where we only buy 6 or 8 horses a year, that we've placed 15 stallions since we've been doing this since 82 in different regional markets or, you know, something like that. So that's a testament to their expertise and time and eye for the horse.
And with the team, with the three of you, obviously, you know, a little bit different backgrounds and bringing a different point of view in. But I would imagine with the experience of buying horses and going through the process of prepping horses to get to the track, with that sort of familiarity, it has to be kind of a well-oiled machine, I guess, at this point, when thinking about what types of horses to add to the program.
Yes, and it's changed. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the whole breeding has changed over sure. the years. With the number of mares these stallions are breeding now, you know, everybody's saying, well, that horse has a turf pedigree. Well, guess what? You know, back when we first started, there were 2 747s sitting at the Lexington airport that were buying horses that weren't going to be staying in the United States. You know, they were going over to Europe. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the good bloodlines that we had back then had gone to Europe. And mm-hmm. you know, I admire Peter Brandt for one thing that he's trying to do is, you know, brings in others, bring some of that European bloodlines back to right. our country. And it's going to interject that turf side. So I just think it's, you know, important to, once you find something that works, it's not going to work all the time, like any sport. But you got to stick with it and blowing it up and starting all over when you have a bad year, because there's going to be more bad years than good years. And the patience and giving the horse every opportunity to make it to be as successful or as successful as they can on the racetrack is important. And patience is the biggest thing.
It definitely is a huge piece of it, especially in this game with so many ups and downs. But I know it was a lot of excitement off the Peter Pan, and looking forward to cheering for Team Antiquarian going into the Belmont Stakes, and looking forward to seeing you up here as well, Don. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Acacia, always my pleasure, and thank you for all you do as well.
Thank you. That wraps up another episode of In the Ring. Thank you to Don Little and to Price Bell for bringing some great insight today and talking about a couple of those Belmont Stakes contenders. And a huge thank you to Adelphi Racing Club for continued support. As always, be sure to visit adelphiracing.com for more information, or you can email matt@adelphiracing.com to inquire. If you're going to be around the track next weekend for Belmont Stakes Racing Festival, please do come and say hi. You can probably find me in the paddock or running around like a crazy person, but really looking forward to it. And we'll see you next time on In the Ring.